We have dear friends who are raising a toddler. It's not for the faint of heart. And they're doing a really wonderful job of it. They're helping this curious and hilarious kid learn to make good choices and learn about the world around them. And recently, this child had the opportunity to eat one of their favorite foods, which is donut holes. When they insisted on yet another donut hole, and by this time we'd even lost count of how many donut holes they'd eaten, they're kind of small, right? Our friend said, "Why don't you listen to your body, honey? What does your body need?" And this child, without missing a beat, said, "My body needs more donut holes." Now, we know that truly none of our bodies need donut holes. But when we're left to our own devices, we'll make poor choices, thinking even that we need them. Our cravings get the better of us constantly as humans. Our scriptures this morning on this third Sunday of Lent are meant to shape and guide we who are always looking for more donut holes. We began with the Exodus text with the Ten Commandments, so beautifully read by Roger, a guide for right relationship with God and one another. A reminder that if we are left to our own devices, we often choose to be small and selfish and greedy and even murderous. We need to be told, sometimes in very blunt terms, how to live. Act right. This is the way. The Ten Commandments were meant to strengthen the community through this, right? It's always all about community. You need to act right so you don't hurt those around you, so that we can come together and be strong and loving and secure. Our epistle this morning is cryptic, as one side of the letter corresponds without the other typically is. It speaks to the cross being foolishness to those who are perishing, and yet the wisdom of God for those who are being saved. It speaks to those who think they have all of the answers, right? It says, "Where are the experts?" Oh, there's so many experts these days, aren't there? Whew, everywhere you look. Where are the scribes? Where are the debaters? Also, a lot of debaters these days. Where are the people that are always so sure they are right and everyone else is wrong? It's impossible, y'all. To think that we know more than God is bondage. To think that we know more than our neighbor is foolishness. To try and assert our own human power and what we believe is arrogance and sin. We have to remember that if we have to mistreat others, even if we're right or wrong, when we embrace the ways of Jesus, what might even be called the foolishness of the Christ's cross, because it's so countercultural. It's countercultural to live in the way of forgiveness, the way of service, the way of sharing power, the way of empowering rather than dominating, the way of open-heartedness. That way is countercultural to the ways of the world. It's confounding and scandalous. Sounds like foolishness. It doesn't really automatically bring people in, right? Ironically, we did have donut holes in the narthex this morning, but that's where that message ends this morning. Through the HEB Foundation Narrative Change Project, I had an incredible tour of the missions San Jose and San Juan this week, and it was led by a man who is a member of the American Indians of Texas organization. He works there, and it was such a wonderful perspective on the missions, because we got not only the history of the missions, but the history of before of that place. And one of the incredible things that we learned as we were there were the ways that the cultures just intertwined so much, and to be able to see what came from one and what came from the other. And one of the pieces that was shared with us was how the Native American church called spiritual life the red path. And we had an 86-year-old singer and storyteller and wonderful human being named Grandmother Coyote who shared with us. And she told us something that we all know, but that the red path is extremely difficult. She said, there's another path. There's the black path, and that will take you to right where you want to go and where you think you should go, and it will get you in big trouble fast. But the red path is difficult and takes strength and courage and discipline. This is the way that we have to choose. Finally, we land on our gospel text for the day, Jesus tearing up the temple. The only place where we see Jesus engage in any kind of physical violence, although it's important to note that he did not hurt anyone, just property. Jesus' anger was placed where it usually was, toward those taking advantage of the vulnerable. And as always, his anger and frustration was shared by the vulnerable. When Jesus went and preached about this new way of being, we often talk about how he made those in power angry. It's what killed him, right? He made himself so antithetical to the powers that be that they had to kill him for it. But one of the things that we don't think about all the time is how most of the people who heard that story were infused with incredible hope. Most of the people who heard what he said and were affected by his healing and were fed by his hand were people who were held down, pushed down, and were incredibly inspired and encouraged by him. Humans, bad decisions that we make at all, really do have an incredible capacity for hope. And the first century was a time where most people were held under the thumb of oppressors. So the people that had been oppressed were inspired by Jesus, and New Testament scholar and ELCA pastor, Reverend Dr. Catherine Shaner, suggests that there was already movements of resistance amongst those who were being held down. And so when Jesus started preaching and teaching and healing, it encouraged them and moved them. And that on that day in the temple, Jesus probably did not act alone. That others drew together with him. What Jesus did, turning over the tables, disrupting the actions of the temple marketplace, couldn't have been done by just one person. I mean, it would have gotten taken care of right quick, right? If Jesus started tearing things up, what would happen? Okay, guards come over, pull them out, end of story. But if it's a concerted effort, if there were more involved, if there were so many people involved that you couldn't even identify one without the other, a bigger group of folk moving towards hope and solidarity and revolution, Jesus wouldn't have been pulled away so fast. It also tracks better with the heart of Jesus. Jesus, who never acted solo, who chose to partner with humanity, who made sure that he surrounded himself with a team, with friends, with those in need, with those who needed hope most. Jesus, who is even in God's self, a part of Trinity, never alone, even when he went away for 40 days into the desert, who was with him? The angels. Jesus made it his practice to always be working in concert with everything. It is our job as a community to be the body of Christ. Part of the message of why Jesus had to ascend to the Father was so that this could be done on a scale bigger than one person could do alone. And if he continued, everybody would always look to Jesus, right? Which we should be doing, but not physically. It complicates things, though, right? That we often don't believe. That we seek things that are empty. That we ignore the needs around us. We ignore even what we need the most. That we forget what we were created for healing and grace and wholeness, that we forget that we're a vital member and part of the body of Christ. And honestly, if you've ever known somebody to even lose a toe, it throws off everything. like we're stuck in that marketplace at the donut hole stand, not stopping. When what we really need is forgiveness. What we really need is service. What we really need is to dismantle systems of oppression. What we really need is to be invited to participate in setting ourselves and each other free. What we really need is to turn over the tables that have kept us small and selfish and complicit. What we really need is revolution. The community of faith that we are here with, that we are to each other, helps us do this, reminds us who we are. Through our corporate worship, through our ministry together, through our prayers for one another, we're reminded who we are. Members of the body of Christ, who are to band together, locking arms and hearts in love to transform the world where we stand and to continue to reverberate that grace and love everywhere we go. It is what you are for me. It is what I am for you. A reminder of who we really are, individually and collectively, the power of God. And as we live into that, in small ways and large ways, we can be transformed by it, bit by bit, every day more. Jesus has shown us the way of community, the way of solidarity, the way of justice, the way of peace, the way of love, the way of grace. May the body of Christ here on earth, for this time, for this place, crave what he craves. It is what the body needs.